Hi, this is Yumi speaking from Japan, Haneda Airport. This is Tokyo International Airport, and I'm sitting down in a coffee shop with a man called Leonido
Tereshchukin.
I can't even pronounce, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's from Russia, and he has Echo Village, and he's the editor of the book called Anastasia. It's one of them, and it's a book of...
Ringing Cedars series.
So Ringing Cedars series has 9 books, I think, right?
It is.
Yeah, and he's the editor of English version of the book. And I've just found about this site and his their work a few days ago. I was giving a talk in Okayama. Okayama is not so close to Takamatsu, but I found out it was possible, connected by railroad, so I could go there by 1 hour, within 1 hour or two. So I went to see... this amazing man sitting down next to me right now, and I'm interviewing him. He's on the way back to United States after 7 days tour in Japan, and he was giving talk in Tokyo and also Kagawa Prefecture, and it's been very, very successful, I believe. And a friend of mine has just emailed me, this is amazing community in Russia, and it's about all sustainability and spirituality into action, and I got excited because that's what I want to do. So here you are, welcome.
Thank you.
So please introduce yourself to the listeners.
My name is Leonid Tereshchukin. And I'm originally from Russia, and this is where I consider my home still is. I have a plot of land in one of Russia's new eco-villages that sprouted all over the country over the past 10 years. And last year I received a doctoral degree in forestry and defended a dissertation on the cultural, economic, social, and even spiritual significance of gardening. You know, what you mentioned about bringing spirituality into action, I feel is so important because until recently, many people viewed spirituality as something removed from your everyday life and everyday activity. But what the Russian eco-villages and Russian gardeners demonstrate is creating a beautiful living garden around you is the best way to express in this material world your inner consciousness. For this reason, for the past 5 years, I was involved in translating a series of 9 books by a Russian author, Vladimir McGrath. The series called the Ringing Cedars series, the first book being Anastasia, that bring back to our consciousness these very ancient concepts of being connected to your land and not finding in it just... physical nourishment, but also nourishment for your spirit and for your heart.
I really understand what you're talking about, because when I started planting rice, I grow my own rice. I was born and raised in Tokyo, so I had no idea how to plant rice or anything, right? But the moment I went into the paddy and start planting rice, something happened to me, you know, the connection, the heaven and earth, and I'm in between. And I said, wow, what is this? You know, something happened to me, and I'm a different person since then.
And you know, many people in Russia, when they change their urban lifestyle, exchange their urban lifestyle for simpler life in the countryside, they have this feeling of reconnection and recollection, remembering. You know, many feel that it's like some kind of ancestral memory that awakens in you when you start practicing the lifestyle of your ancestors.
Exactly.
Because when you think about it, today culture is considered confined to arts, that professional practice, to the language, to maybe some traditional dress, but the traditional lifestyle, and the traditional lifestyle in any culture, in Japanese, American, Russian, and anywhere in the world, until very recently, it was the culture of living on the land and living in harmony with Mother Earth.
Exactly.
So until we reclaim this tradition, the traditional lifestyle of any people on the earth of living in harmony with the land, we cannot even appreciate the essence of our own culture.
I totally agree with you. And I wouldn't be able to meet you if this were 10 years ago, because I was living in the city. I was a banker. I was trading bonds. for American Bank, so that was I was money making, yeah, and that was my goal and my career, and I quit, and so.
But you know the amazing thing in my first degree, I got a degree from one of Russia's best business schools.
Okay.
So my first degree was in international economics.
Oh, okay.
And my wife's degree was in international investment banking and finance.
Oh my God.
So we were preparing. We met at this one of Russia's best business schools, and we were preparing ourselves for careers in a big business, right, living in a large city,
yeah,
and doing career. But it was largely due to reading the Anastasia series that we started asking ourselves what is of real value in life and what we want to achieve in life. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, most people don't ever ask this question. Mm-hmm. They're being raised into parts of the system, and they may question a number of things, but they do not question whether their life choices and their choice of their lifestyle is the right one or not, and whether it really brings them happiness and fulfillment. So we didn't move from Moscow to this Ica village just because we read the book that was saying, oh, it's good to live on the land. Mm-hmm. It is rather we did this because we started asking ourselves questions influenced by this book that we had not been asking before. And when you start asking the right questions, you find the answers not in any kind of external authority or any book. Mm-hmm. You start finding the questions we need. And actually, you know, there are so many books on spirituality that and so many traditions that say that all the answers are within you, but it's so abstract, you cannot even visualize how it might work. But when you start not just thinking and trying to get the mental concept of what your life should be, when you actually start implementing it in action. So when you marry your thought with action, this is when the full awareness of the right lifestyle emerges.
You're talking about me.
Not only about you.
I feel as if.
You know, and in Russia there are 100 million 100 million people, and this is 70% of the population, who have their gardens where they grow vegetables and fruit for their own family and their own consumption.
Dacha.
And you know, many believe that, well, Russians have that many gardens just because they're so poor they cannot afford buying potatoes on the market. But you know, in the garden settlement, the Dacha settlement where my parents have a plot of land, one of the neighbors is a banker from the city of Moscow. And this rich man is driving his luxurious BMW vehicle to his small plot of land in the countryside every weekend to spend his weekend there, digging in the soil and planting potatoes and harvesting radishes. Even the Russian President Yeltsin, when he was in the office, he was reported to spend his weekends in his garden planting vegetables.
Yeah. Oh my God, I thought he was just a drunkard.
Well, maybe he was distilling his own alcohol from his own potatoes.
I see. Well, I ate your cooking. I was very, very impressed. I've never met any lecturer after all the lectures is finished cooking for the staff. I've seen this for the first time. You're an amazing man.
Thank you.
I think just everybody agree with me, right? It was so tasty. What was
yes.
it? How do
no,
you
no,
make
no.
it?
No, but you know,
I'm a chef myself. I have to learn. I have to steal from you.
No, but it is a part of the Russian culture to the present day. This culture of sharing. And you know, Russians realize, and despite all the westernization of the Russian society that we now see, Russians do not give even Russian names to their children. They use Greek or Roman or Jewish names. They wear blue jeans from America. They watch European and American movies, etc., etc. So there is a lot of westernization. But even so, the essence of culture has remained unchanged, and you still see a lot of sharing. And amazingly, people think in the Western world, oh, if I share something, I will have less of it, right? But they don't realize that if you share something for free, then in the person you shared it with, it creates an inner desire to share back with you. and actually to give back to you more than they have received. And there are entire books written on this culture of sharing in Russia, showing that when you start sharing with an open heart, the return flow to you is even greater. So you receive back more from this person, and they were looking at it in Russian villages. You would give a person a bucket of potatoes for free. This person thinks, he gave me a bucket of potatoes, what surplus do I have? Then they will bring you two buckets of onions. Now I think, gosh, I gave them just one bucket of potatoes, but I received two buckets of onions. Do I have any surplus? Oh, I have a bag full of carrots. And they give like a 50 kilo bag of carrots back. And so there is this exchange when people just share. And they share more, more, and more. And it enriches their lives and the lives of the whole community, even there might be no money involved.
Mm-hmm. It makes it you very, very rich. Rich life. Mm-hmm. Real richness. Real. Yeah, I can see that. So that's something starting to happen in Japan. In many communities in Japan, they start having local currency movement. And you don't have to use currency, but the bringing back the old culture of sharing, like you said. We had that culture too. If you have more than enough, you just share with neighbors and in the community. Mm-hmm. And that tradition is long forgotten and gone, but in my city of Kamogawa, we have this local currency movement, and now we exchange every service with this local currency called awa money. And some families are now living without any money, just by using local currency. It is amazing. This is happening on a small scale, but if this happens in every community in Japan, even though the economy doesn't look good and the banks are maybe collapsing and we may lose lots of money and stocks and investments, but we still live nicely.
Yes, and exactly, you know, because every human being aspires for independence and freedom. But there can be no real freedom if you depend on somebody else for the very necessity of your life, like food. Mm-hmm. You know, until 100 years ago, nobody depended on the national economy to feed their own family. Everybody were growing their own food, with the exception of the few of the very elite. Mm-hmm. But it was normal to really provide the most essential things in life, like food and shelter, for yourself, for your own family, using your own local resources. And look, today, everybody depends on the monetary system and on the national and even the global economy, even to buy a loaf of bread or a bowl of rice for themselves and their family. And so where is the freedom of man and where is the independence? It gives you the seeming convenience of being able to come to a store to give a piece of paper and receive a bag full of groceries in exchange, but it is illusory because it works only as long as this piece of paper represents something. And so Russians still remember the time when 100 years ago, after the Bolshevik Revolution, diamond rings and pieces of gold and sapphire earrings were exchanged for a loaf of bread, which really showed the real value of material possessions.
When it comes to that hard time, yeah, those things, those things, I mean, diamonds and gold.
But it's not even about the material possessions, it's about how you feel. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen in America that people, they have significantly more material possessions than in Russia, especially if compared with the Russian peasants in the countryside. Mm-hmm. But they are much more miserable inside, because they all have to worry about mortgages and workload hours and borrow from one credit card to pay another credit card and the interest. So, no, it's a very stressful inexperience. So what matters most ultimately is what people enjoy in life inside of them. And if they're able to enjoy their life living a very simple lifestyle without too much money, their existence may be much richer and much happier than even those who might have very fat bank accounts.
I cannot agree with you more. Because once we started living in the country and started growing our own food, and now we are building our own house, we are renovating 200-year-old Edo period house using our own material, like soil and the straws from our harvest, rice. We're using that as a wall, and it's It's so enjoyable. I really, I'm going back home today and I'm doing more plastering in the wall using the, the straws from our harvest. And the house is, we used to, you know, to build a house you have to have so much money and to have the loan and you pay all your life to pay back the mortgage. And we're not doing it. We're just using, you know, materials available locally and in our house and building our house. I mean, rebuilding and leaving this old 20-year-old home, bringing us the ideas and also imagination of how those days, 20 years ago, our ancestors lived in this house. And it's, you know, happy. It makes me happy and very creative. And we have no soaps, nothing from supermarket because it will pollute our water. We have no city water. We have mountain stream, and we don't have any
sewage
either. So our gray water goes back to the garden and it recycles. So we cannot put any chemical in it. So everything we use is organic and natural in the house. And people come and stay. We have a small inn business. People from the city can come and enjoy eat our garden food. I'm the chef. That's why I have to learn your soup. And that's something I'm trying to get from the recipe of your soup yesterday. It was so good. What's in it? In it? What was the seasoning of your soup yesterday?
I tried to cook a Russian borscht, the beet soup. But because we couldn't find any beets, it was a modified Japanese version of the Russian beet soup without beets.
What was the seasoning?
The seasoning was onions and carrots toasted in olive oil, and then you add this to the boiling broth of turnips, or better, the beets, cabbage, potatoes, and parsley leaf.
That's it?
Yeah, it's very simple.
Russian food is usually...
paprika
as well.
And paprika. Yeah, bell peppers or red peppers. So, you know, Russian food is very simple, and it's also part of the tradition, because what I discovered is that our ancestors had a very good understanding that food does not just nourish your body, it also nourishes your spirit. And they saw a huge difference between a loaf of bread that the woman in the family baked in their own oven and mixed the dough with her own hands, and the same loaf of bread that could be bought in a store. 100 years ago, for people in Russia, there was even a sort of curse when you were saying about somebody that they do not bake bread in their own home, but they get it from somewhere else. It was an indication that there is a real distress in the family, that something is wrong. Like today, the whole of the country is getting their bread from elsewhere.
We have the wheat field as well as rice field, because my husband really likes the bread and he's so much into it. So he was searching for good wheat and he couldn't find it. So we finally start growing our own wheat and we have our own bread. And it's so good.
And also, you know, I noticed that what matters as much as just the enjoyment of simple life is that you give your children a better environment to grow up. And you teach them by example, because ultimately they do not intellectually get the ideas about how to proceed the living life. They observe the society and they observe most of all their parents. And if their parents spend most of their time working to earn money, subconsciously children get the message from their very parents that the most important thing in life is work. Yeah, and if you spend your work week running after dollars or yens, but you tell your children, oh, it's good to live in the country, you know, they will not listen, because they see with their own eyes what your real values are. But when this lifestyle changed, I've seen it on my own example with my children.
How old are they?
Two daughters, 7 and 2. Yes, all. But just because they have the freedom of roam free, there is no crime, right? In the city, you are afraid of letting the child go and play outside there. Well, it doesn't apply to every city, by all means. But in Russia, you would not let your child in a large city go and play outside there unsupervised. And in America, you wouldn't do it because somebody would call police and say that there is an abandoned child. It's called child abandonance, and it has happened to me several times. Just you cannot even leave your child on the local playground several hundred meters away from your home. So, you know, in the city, children are confined to this artificial environment, and this artificial environment forms their worldview for the whole life, and this is what they will be recreating in their life.
Right.
And
you cannot trust the people. You have to be afraid all the time. Yeah. You have to. That's what we are teaching, right?
Yeah.
The men are bad. People are bad. Yeah.
But also, you know, the perception, the whole perception of the world. In the city, children are surrounded with artificial objects, and this gives them the idea that they live in the world where artificial objects is the main thing. And when they have a gardening experience, or where they see their children growing their own tomatoes or cucumbers, this already just gives them subconsciously an idea that there are other values in life. And it doesn't go just, it doesn't have to do just with growing of your food. The ramifications of this affect really all aspects of life. The degree of understanding of even of social problems of a 5-year-old child raised in a more natural setting will be much greater than a government official who has spent all his life in a large city. To give you an example, each year the United States Postal Service organizes a food drive. And they give you a postcard in your mailbox saying that on such and such day, you can go to a supermarket, buy some canned food, and put it into your mailbox. And the mail carrier will take this food and deliver it to the nearest food bank for distribution to the hungry. And my daughter, she was 5 at that time, she saw this postcard and asked me to translate it to her. She said, "What is it about?" And I said, "Well, they want to feed hungry people." She said, "Wow, what a great concept. So what do they propose?" I say, "Well, they propose that you go to the supermarket and buy some canned food and put it in the mailbox and they'll deliver it to the poor." And this 5-year-old child, without any like input from my side, I was not saying that it was a bad idea or a good idea. I just let her form her own opinion. And she thought for 20 seconds and then asked the question, "But what will happen when they finish eating all this canned food? They will still be hungry. Don't they know that you can plant a seed in the ground and it will grow food for you?" And she thought a little bit longer and thought, "But Daddy, why are there in the first place hungry people? Because growing food is so easy." And knowing that I would be going to a conference, she said, "Daddy, you know, if people are receiving postcards like that, you really need to tell them something." I say, "What?" And she says, "Well, you need to tell them, people, do not put canned food in your mailboxes, because the hungry people will eat this food and they will still be hungry. But the next time you will have to put medicines and drugs into your mailbox to cure them of the diseases that they will get from eating canned food." And you know, this is the understanding of a 5-year-old child.
"Daddy, you should put the seeds in it. Right? She should say this."
Yeah, exactly.
Give the seed to the poor.
Yeah.
Put the seed, then it will grow.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the meaning of the word family in the Russian language is a seed.
Oh.
It's amazing that a large part of my presentation yesterday was about this real significance of words that we use to the present day. And they're amazing because it's not just a coincidence. It reflects the ancient understanding of what family life was about. Really, it was seen like part of like the emergence of life. And you were part of this universal flow of life. And in each birth and in each family, and there was the merger of all the preceding generations, the roots, and the emergence of all the future generations, the new shoots that will eventually grow from this family. It's just one simple word. When you start rediscovering what this ancient tradition and ancient worldview and ancient lifestyle was, our present way of life starts seeming utterly crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So in Russia, you say 10 million people are already doing...
100 million people.
100 million people, so that's like 70% of your population.
Yeah.
And also in the United States, Eco Village is happening in various parts of the United States.
Yes, but on a much smaller scale. To give you an example, in Russia, the total area of gardens is 80,000 square kilometers. This is about 20 million acres. In America, the area of ornamental lawns, just the grass, is twice the size of that. And American ornamental gardeners are number one consumers of pesticide in the world. Even American agriculture, commercial agriculture, consumes less pesticide than the households.
No wonder there are so many cancer people in many diseases. Resulting from the chemical, too much chemicals and radiations, and also in Japan we have a lot of use of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And normal farmers, if you use more chemicals, pesticides and herbicides and fungicides and all sides, then they get a word from the agricultural association.
And then people start wondering where is the true root of genocide or suicide, noticing that this is the same side.
Yes.
Because side means killing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you treat grass as something that you can kill, and grasses are as alive as you are, herbicide literally means killing grass. So where is this boundary between killing grass or killing animals that you call pests and eventually killing human beings? It's really a reflection of this killing and death and dominance and destruction mentality. But there is a different way, of course.
Yes. And it grows much better. I mean, it's a taste and also even abundance.
And it also boils down to the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
When you grow your own food on your own small plot of land, no way you would be putting chemicals on the food for your own children. But when you remove the responsibility for growing your own food there, and somebody else is doing it, they do not care. They might not even ever know your family. They may even be on the other side of the globe. Even here in Japan, a very large proportion of rice is imported because farmers cannot compete with the prices of imported rice.
Rice is still pretty much good. I mean, it's Japanese rice still. It's starting to happen, but other food, vegetables and other food, we import about 60% of our food from outside. So our dependency on the global citizens is so great, and they don't know you. So you're right, they put all kind of chemicals, of course, and they believe that's what consumer wants, you know, clean and the same size
and cardboard tasting.
Yeah. So that's unfortunate, and I believe that many children in Japan do not like vegetables because of the bad taste.
Exactly. If you think about it, we eat an apple and we enjoy an apple on its own. We don't need to put some condiment on an apple to enjoy it. And I've tasted in Russia cucumbers that are so good, you don't want to add any salt to them or anything, or any mayonnaise or any dressing, because they are so good as a standalone vegetable. And this applies to any fruit. If it's not genetically engineered or hybridized, if it is the heirloom variety and grown in rich soil, then the taste of it will be such that you won't need any food additives.
Right. So, okay, he has to go back to United States today. His flight is catching up, so we must wrap up this interview. And thank you very much for having time with me. And it was a joy to discover you in my life and discover you. I mean, I know Mayumi-san, who's the translator of and organizer of your trip to Japan. It's Mayumi Jingu, I used to know her as Mori Mayumi-san, Mayumi Mori. Mm-hmm. She's an artist and entrepreneur, and she's an author and very talented, multi-talented woman. And I finally found them, and I hope we continue to work together towards more happy, sustainable planet.
Yeah, thank you. And if you are interested to learn more, you mm-hmm. can visit ringingcedars.com.
Ringingcedars.com.
Yeah.
That's your website.
Yeah.
Okay, stay in touch. Thank you, Leonido.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mayumi-san. I'll see you. Thank you. Bye.